Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, Our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies, and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause the country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I posted a funny little video over there on www.shazizradio.com/superchatHTML. That's a little page right there where you can actually talk to two different chat rooms at the same exact time. One of them being Shaziz Radio chat room, and one of them being Wake Radio chat room. So that's the super chat there. So anyway, I posted a funny little video in there. You said I might want to go over and check it out. I posed the question: is this a NASA scientist? You know, you gotta ask those tough questions once in a while. Anyway, out here in this world, we're trying to make the world a better place, and we're researching behind the scenes all different alternative energy deals and health deals and all that kind of stuff. And there's multiple networks connected to this one specific network and other networks out there, and you can find all the links over there at ChazizRadio.com. If you don't like what you hear on our radio station, then click on one of the other links and go listen to one of the other radio stations, because I don't care whether you get the information from somebody on the other side of the planet, just as long as you get the information that you need to benefit your life, you know, whether it be alternative medicines. There's a lot of research going on out there, and we have a connection to folks out there that's done research in just about every direction under the sun. See, if the internet was used for its proper purpose, you know, for a good research tool, then it'd be a valuable tool and a resource to bring all the brilliant minds from all over this globe together in what I would call the dream team, you know, where you got all these people coming together for specific projects and sharing resources and research and such. Could you imagine what we could accomplish? You know, I've talked to folks all the way from Canada to Ireland, Scotland, Japan, Russia, Australia, and there are so many brilliant people all over this planet. It's just mind-boggling. Each one of them hold a piece of the puzzle to solving. You know, we talk about goes all the way back to other networks out there seeking solutions for problems that exist around the world. See, my only frustration comes from the fact that here I am getting ready to turn 50 years old here right shortly, and all the way back in time I keep hearing all these stories about children over on the other side of the planet starving, and or homeless people living up underneath a bridge and all this kind of stuff. And the organizations out there that are supposedly there to benefit society, such as the whole United Nations out there, don't seem to have a very good track record, in my opinion. And so, you know, with that said, why are we standing here in the year 2015 and we're still hearing about starving babies around the world when we have the technology to take over there and do some irrigation and some hydroponics or aquaponics and be able to help these folks help themselves? You know, somebody said one time, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, but if you give him a fishing pole and teach him how to fish, you know, you're feeding him for a lifetime. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about all these brilliant minds that have spent countless hours by themselves out there researching everything under the sun, just looking for the truth of whatever's out there and sharing that with everybody and his brother throughout all the planet. I think that we have a really good opportunity here if we don't blow it, you know. My friend Raymond's always talking about if you ignore history, then history's bound to repeat itself. You know, we don't want to do the same doggone thing over and over and over again. When we're standing here on the precipice of what could very well be the best future for all of humanity. So we bring these brilliant minds together on this platform, Shaziz Radio and Awake Radio and People-to-People Radio and 1800 Online and TCT Radio and all the different networks out there combined. And we share these informations and we share guests with one another, and we've actually met a lot of people that we otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to meet. We have a lot of friends around the globe. Brilliant individuals, people just like you and I that just want to see some sort of better future for not just our children, but our children's children, and so on. So, you know, we're standing here looking out into the future, and we have the opportunity to pave the stones into that future to make our world a better place. And we need to take advantage of this situation while we have the opportunity. Because I keep saying, we are the founding fathers, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers, the aunts, uncles, cousins of our children and our children's children's future. And what we do today will definitely define the world that they live in tomorrow. And so with that said, I got Justin and Stuart on here. And, you know, we're kind of in a a heated discussion about technology and terminology and all that kind of stuff. That's how them ideas get to flowing out there. You know, most generally, if you don't discuss the idea or you don't... I talked to an electrical engineer just the other day. He's telling me how many years of electrical engineering and electronics he's had, and he's like, well, it's never been done before. Well, just because it ain't been done before don't mean it can't be done. That's what I look at it. And if you pick up the school book and the school book says this is it and those are your limitations, you can't take your dreams any farther than the limitations that you believe are possible or not. So with that said, I refuse to get back in the box. I'm going to stand outside the box. I'm going to argue with groups like NASA and NOVA and the EPA and all the different alphabet soups out there. I'm going to argue with them. If I see something, I'm going to say something. You know, kind of use borrowing a term for them, saying something against their own technology that they mostly use to fearmonger people. I'm not into fearmongering. I'm into getting some folks out there's brains stimulated to the extent that they actually go out there and they take an idea that they see some worth in and they run with that idea and expand on it. That's what builds the future. If guys like Tesla and all the different brilliant minds of the past, Stan Myers, if they never did anything outside the box because they were told it wasn't possible, then we wouldn't be talking about all these alternative energies right now. We'd just be paying the man and knowing our place and shutting our face, that kind of stuff. But I refuse. I'm a rebel against the laws of physics, and Justin might agree that I'm a rebel against the terminology. But hey, that's why I call it mad science. But since today we're on the Knights of the Round Table, it still applies. So.
Well,
you got any thoughts there?
I'm just trying to get a point across that nobody out there has made an official Tesla coil.
Yeah, and I tried to get my point across to you. I don't care.
You know?
Because, look, the Tesla coil's neat. It's neat. It's cool, you know. And if you use it right, it would be a good transmitter / receiver of wireless energy. But it's blatantly obvious the way the infrastructure is set up today, the Wardenclyffe Tower wouldn't go over so well out here because now you'd have the FCC involved. They got to get their hand in the wallet there. See, if you're going to be shipping out wireless energy, you got to be under the Federal Communications Commission now, right? Well, with all those cell phone towers out there and, you know, possible disruptions. They're going to try to figure out any way to quell that right out of the gate.
Aren't those cell phone towers on public property?
Well, supposedly. Well, you know, why couldn't
you? I thought our forefathers went to war for us so we can have our land. I guess not, eh?
No, I'm pretty much thinking that they figured out a way to sneak in the back door, do that whole deal, like, what do you call it, doggone it, public domain or something like that. Not that, that's it. What's the word I'm looking for? Where they think that there's a, for the better of all community, they steal your land out from under you. What do they call that?
Tax imposition.
No, there's a word for it. Eminent domain.
Eminent.
Yeah, eminent domain is a rule that they came up with that said that if, like, say they want to put a highway through, and this highway would benefit the city more
majority.
Than the majority of the people out there, then they'll put this highway through. They'll have to pay you for the value of your land and then some for your whatever. But a lot of folks don't like their house being stolen away from them so that they can build a highway, so they'll fight against it. But normally, if it's for the better of all the community, they manage to figure out a way to get it away from you anyway. So now, right next to your house, you got this highway. You know, eminent domain. It's just another fancy way of talking about, hey, we're coming in to take your property and you ain't going to be able to do nothing about it, kind of thing. You know, just like not paying your taxes. If you don't pay your taxes, they'll after so many years, 2 years I think over here in Missouri, they'll take and sell your house out from underneath you on the courthouse steps. So, you know, there's a whole lot more to it than meets the eye. It's basically government learned tricky ways on how to steal your stuff. You know, I'm betting right now that if you could track down Uncle Sam, I'm betting if you track down Uncle Sam right now, you familiar with that term bling? Yeah, like gold necklaces and gold teeth and stuff. I bet he's got a bunch of bling in his mouth. You know, he's got like diamond up in his gold tooth and stuff. Yeah, I bet he's got it all, man. Rolling around in his limousine with the hydraulics. You know, the low riders that... Huh? What'd you say?
Sounded like one of these gold teeth fell out.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, he got all his gold teeth and all his bling and his necklace, or his doggone rings and his lower rider with the hydraulics in there and the thumper stereo system in the back, you know, and he's going down through Washington, D.C., doom, 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 you know, and he's doing it on your dollar. He's got an unlimited credit card, old Uncle Sam. What do you think? Think I'm wrong?
Nope.
But, you know, people keep electing the same individuals in office. I mean, if they are actually electing them, because, you know, with the whole voter fraud thing going on, you know, that's just conspiracy, right? Do you remember, I know you guys live in a different state, right, or country, whatever. Do you remember the old hanging Chad debacle from Florida back in one of the last elections or so? You guys remember hearing about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had to punch cards, and the Chad wasn't quite hanging off, so they would go in there and cheat people out of votes and such. Now it's got the digital thing, you know. You go up there and...
I think that's been going on for a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, you go there and you vote for somebody on the digital machine, and you push your button for your candidate, and you watch the numbers go up for the other candidate. So, something ain't jiving with that whole deal. You know? So, as far as the fair elections, I think the ones that had it best were those guys over there in the Middle East, the one that they dip your finger in blue or purple ink so that you shows you already voted, you know? What do you think? So you come up there, you got a purple finger, you can't vote again? Well, over here in the United States, we got dead people that vote. Sometimes those same dead people vote 30 times or more, you know? So what do you do about that? Lock up the cemeteries on voting day? They have armed guards outside the cemetery. Any of you zombies think you're going to vote today? You're not, all right? You're going to stay right there.
It's bad enough when you start schizophrenia and you vote more than once.
Yeah, and one lady's talking about how her dad had passed away like a year or two prior, and somehow or another her dad voted, and she was all upset. How in the heck her dad voted, you know? And her dad was like a hardcore Republican, and he voted Democrat, so she was, you know, kind of frustrated about that, you know?
He might have changed his ways.
Well, maybe he did. Maybe when he got on the other side, he kind of found out, you know, maybe the Democrats were right. I better go back and vote and fix this. You know? Or he showed up at the pearly gates and they said, I understand you're a Republican. You can't come in. What if I go back and vote Democrat? Well, yeah, that'll work. I don't know.
It's funny, like, there's a lot of people here, like, they go, oh, I'm not voting for this one, I'm not voting for that one, like the two major parties. Oh, I'm going to give a dummy vote, because I don't like those two major parties, or I'm going to vote. I mean, I said to you last time, I said, we got some strange parties here. You know, we've got the Greens, and we've got, you know, some other strange parties, like, one in particular is called the Sex Party. I mean, why have we got a stick? Why have we got a party called the Sex Party?
I don't know, man. I got
but
so.
But the problem is that
I got so
when,
frustrated.
When you look at our voting,
go ahead.
When you look at our vote forms, if you don't choose one or the other, there's about 30 different others that you get to choose from, and you know, they never get in anyway. But they have preferences, and if you don't like the Liberals or the Labor Party here, and you want to give a dummy vote, you're still voting for either one of the parties anyway, because they give their votes to their preferences. So you know, it's a bit of a sham, really.
Well, I got frustrated with the voting system one particular voting cycle, and I went and voted for myself. So somewhere out there, if they keep records of how many votes were cast for whatever candidates in history, there's one guy out there at least that voted for himself. I wrote myself down in the write-in section. So I didn't win. But either way, go ahead.
I don't think it really makes much difference anyway who you vote for anymore, because it's just to keep people amused, really. It's a bit like football teams, really. You don't really have much control over what they do, and half the time I think the people that are in charge don't even have much control in what they're able to do, because they're told what they can and can't do, and they've got limits.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look back through even your history, the American history, you know, a lot of the politicians wanted to do plenty of things, and I mean, look what happened to Kennedy. You know, there was things that he wanted to say, and he got silenced.
Yeah, after his famous speech where he's pretty much talking about bringing it all to light, that's it wasn't too much longer after it he got shot. You know, and you heard the Kennedy speech? Where he talks about the vast conspiracy behind the scenes and all that? Secrecy is repugnant, that kind of deal?
I might have heard part of it.
Well, we'll have to get you a link to that.
Here in Australia, we can't decide who we want to be our Prime Minister, because they keep changing them. Yeah, every few months. I don't understand what's going on there, so I've kind of given up on it. But, you sometimes the better you do, you know, but, they change them so often these days that people are confused. I mean, I've worked in a place where they breed politicians at a university, and after seeing them at a young age, it's no wonder we have a thing here called Question Time. And I can't stand watching it, because of the fact that when you listen to them in Question Time and they've got the two different parties, you know, either side of the room there, and they argue like children at school, you know, calling each other names and carrying on, and you think, you guys are meant to be running the country. You know, and where I used to work at a university, I wasn't a teacher there, I was actually on the maintenance crew there, but I used to see half of these students running around and all their political crap and all the way that they carry on, and I thought, you know, you're so destructive in nature. You know, if you don't get your way, you start destroying things, and yet you want to be the leaders of our country. You know, you need a few lessons in respect before you get any positions in running a country. I mean, you can't even operate, you know.
Let me ask you a question.
A small group, let alone.
I know it happens over here. Do you ever get frustrated when the mainstream media come on there and they say the majority of the Australians say, you know, and you sit there and wonder, like, okay, well, I'm not saying that. I wonder about my neighbors, and you talk to all your friends, and they're totally in disagreement. No, we didn't say that. Who are they polling? Why? How? Where did they come about the numbers of the majority Australians say? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've wondered that for many years.
Because it frustrates the heck out of me when they're talking about, you know, like 60% of Americans say we ought to go over there and bomb Iraq. You know, I'm part of the America, I thought, you know. I don't want to go over and bomb Iraq. But, you know, they're saying they got these poles out there, right? Now I want to know where they're taking these poles at. Because I got to get my say in there and say, no, you know, no, I don't want to go over there and bomb these people. You know what I mean? It's all about public perception. And since they pretty much own the mainstream media, they can pretty much sit there and lie to you. They even, look, that ought to be a red flag. When they pass a law that says that it's all right for the mainstream media is to spread propagandas and all in all out lie to you, then something's wrong with that. And even in the police department, the Supreme Court ruled that the police can flat out lie to you to get evidence for a crime against you or whatever. And so, you know, you could be talking to just the average Joe in plain clothes, could be a cop sitting there lying to you out the eyeball, and trying to get evidence on you. Now, see, if you go to court and you tell the judge that, well, he said he was going to buy some drugs and sell some guns and stuff like that, well, your evidence is hearsay, whereas his evidence is evidence in the court. So the whole system been set up against you to start to finish. You don't know who you're voting on, whether you're not
getting... Right.
Yeah. So that's messed up, man.
I know about that firsthand. I had to deal with that some time ago. It would have been, with the laws out about talking on mobile phones. And I got pulled over by two police officers one day who accused me of talking on the mobile phone while I was driving. And this is the really funny part about it. I was watching this police car. I was coming up to a T intersection, and they were on the other road on the left. And I was sitting at the lights, and my job was at that time was quite a dirty job. And I remember sitting at the lights, and I had a lump on the back of my head, which was like a big pimple on the back of my head. And I'm sitting there, you know, waiting for the lights to change while I'm, you know, squeezing this pimple on the back of my head. I turned the corner, and next thing you know, woo, the light, you know, the sirens and the lights go off, and I went, oh, don't tell me the tail lights aren't working on the car. And then he says, oh, we noticed you were talking on the phone. I said, excuse me? He says, yes, we saw you talking on the mobile phone while you were driving. And I said, I was expecting him to say that, you know, the lights were out of my car. And I said, no. And I couldn't work out what he was talking about. I didn't even think about what I was doing back before.
Yeah, and, when you reached back there to cast that deal on your head, it looked like you was talking on the phone. See, that's
they
crazy.
They were a good 200 meters away from me, they were. And you know what? All that drama went on for 2 years. Cost me nearly $2,500, all because I refused to pay a $250 fine and get 3 demerit points on my license for something, because they have to get a certain amount of numbers per day of people, to book them for whatever offence. That's right, a quota. And I fought this out of principle. Because, you know, everyone lies to them all the time, but I wasn't brought up to be telling lies. And, I mean, yeah, if I had been talking on the phone, I would have said, yeah, you got me. But I couldn't work out what they were talking about. Anyway, I said to him, all I can think of that I've done recently was I had a hands-free kit that was stuck on the visor of the car. And I said, I turned that on. Oh, no, you can't do that. I said, you mean to tell me it's even illegal to turn a hands-free kit on now? Well, you can't do that, like this. Anyway, this went on for 2 years. I kept trying to go back, because I was in such disbelief. I went back to the main police station where these guys were from, and I tried to find the guy that wrote the ticket out to show him the evidence on the phone that I wasn't talking on the phone, but he was always never available. And it went on. As I said, it cost me over $2,500. By the time I paid court costs and solicitors and all the rest of it, and it was an absolute waste of time paying the solicitors, because I think I could have done a better job, I still copped a $60 fine and $40 court costs. Those two police officers never had to even turn up. And their statement was so wrong, c-
compared to my statement on where they said they were. And, you know, and I thought, how can they get away with this? They can lie as much as they like, and the judge will side with them, because any civilian has no chance of being believed unless you've got some kind of hard evidence, photos, video, or whatever, and they will always win, and it's always about money.
Yep.
But so I said, my sister-in-law and her partner came over to visit us today, and he just came back from America, and he said, Australia, or where we live in the state called Victoria, and he said, you know, in America, he said, on the roads, it's amazing, it's so much better than here. He said, you can't move on the roads here because it's all about making money. Everywhere you're paranoid about where you drive, because you're always on the lookout for cars parked on the side of the road with speed cameras attached to them. You know, every time you go under a bridge somewhere, there's speed cameras trying to capture you going, you know, a couple of, you know, K's over the limit, you know, to cost you money in points. There's too much signage. There's, you know, it's just crazy. He said, God, I was sitting on a 100 and whatever mile an hour on the road over in America, and he said, and people were passing me like I was sitting still. He said, God, if you did that here, they'd lock you up for 10 years. So it's all about money and control. And, you know, and if they, one of the things that I found, you know, I worked in the city for 25 years, and I'm glad I live in the country now. The stress level has gone down 200%. I mean, I know it's not possible to get more than 100%, but that's what it feels like. You know, I can drive down the road now without the paranoia of every parked car having a camera on it to book you for, you know, the slightest little, you know, bit over the speed limit or for anything. You know, there's no traffic lights out here. There's none of that rubbish that's in the city. The aggression driving into the city, I mean, I've never been in the States, but I mean, I've been to Canada, but I didn't drive on the road there. But, you know, the aggression on the road driving into the city, it's like too many rats in a box. You know, eventually everyone fights one another for the space, and they're all stressed because they're all, you know, worried about time. They're worried about everything costing them all the time. And they're always at each other's throats. So I'm so glad I'm not driving into the city anymore. So it cost, you know what, Shaziz, it cost me, I worked it out one day. Now, I was getting good wages for my job. I worked it out one day what it cost me in a 12-month period just to go to work. It was costing me about $14,000 a year just to go to work and park there.
Man.
In 12 months, that's what it cost me a year. And I said, this is crazy. Like, by the time you pay fuel, by the time you pay the tollway is to go on the freeways, and by the time you pay parking, you add that up in a 12-month period. I mean, I could use that $13,000 to $14,000. You know, and it's no wonder that so many people are struggling.
Yeah. You know, when
to,
you were
to
talking,
get enough money.
When you were talking about your episode with them trying to accuse you of being on the cell phone, it rung a bell in my mind about just going to the local shopping centers around here. You know, they got everywhere you go, there's cameras watching you all the time. And any perceived move, like, towards your pocket could be perceived as trying to steal something. So I find myself sometimes when I'm in the shopping centers, I will keep my hands as far away from my pockets. It's almost like I'm walking through the doggone department store with my hands in the air. Look, I'm not stealing anything. I'm just here to shop. You know, that kind of... You see what I'm saying? And, you know, so when these guys are seeing, like, you moving your hand up there, even if you was just scratching your head, you know, suddenly you're suspected of talking on the cell phone. You know, it's crazy, the society that we find ourselves living in, where you can't even put your hand in your pocket to check how much change you got without somebody thinking you're going to steal something. But the scary part about that is, it's it's the average Joe out there who is the security guard at all these different places who is eyeballing you, you know. And they live in the same exact society, but they're making it miserable for everybody else by not paying attention to what's really going on. You see what I'm saying? And it all boils down to just like you said. They're not peacemakers anymore. They're armed revenue generators for the state. That's what it's become. You know? And it's sad. And we find
out. I noticed that many years ago at the nightclubs. You know, you go to a nightclub now, and you find that most of the security staff they have, we call them bouncers, their intelligence level is so minimal because they're not protecting the customers, because what they're doing is the slightest little thing that you do that they don't like. They want to take you outside and beat you to a pulp. Now, I nearly got into a big altercation one night at a club here in town many years ago where I didn't want to go to this club. It was very late at night, and I was getting tired, and I wasn't going to wait outside for everybody. I sat down, and I closed my eyes for like 10 seconds, and then next thing you know, I've got all these guys all over me, dragging me out the door and down the stairs and really roughing me up. And I thought, is this the way that you treat your patrons, just for closing their eyes?
Yeah.
You know, and I nearly got into a big fight with this guy. You know, and the police are no different sometimes, the way that they treat you. I mean, look, when we get videos here of what goes on in America and that, you know, I mean, there was a clip recently of a poor guy trying to race his wife to the hospital who was having a baby, and they dragged him out of the car and face down on the ground and guns pointed at him and that, and he says, I'm trying to take my wife to the hospital, she's having a baby. They kept the poor guy there for like 20 minutes while his wife's screaming in agony, and all he was trying to do was get to the hospital. What the hell's wrong with people now that they treat everyone like they're criminals? Like, I said that to one of the police officers here when I questioned him about why I can't show you the evidence to prove that I wasn't doing what you accused me of. I said, the problem is, I said, you deal with these people all the time. You seem to think that everyone's telling lies. Oh, don't worry, he says. We know when they're telling lies. I got that upset. I tell you what, I felt like jumping the counter, and I thought, now I know, you know, why there's so many people hate the police. Because of their attitude, it's not necessarily in them to be like that. They're trained to be like that.
Yeah, that's exactly the deal. They told us at the police academy that you're not there to protect people. You are there to enforce the law. You're not there to interpret the law. You're there to enforce the law. So, if there's a law on the book that you don't agree with, you still got to enforce it anyway. You know, and it's ridiculous. People don't understand. If you don't know your rights and you talk to a law enforcement agent, you could get yourself in so much trouble. And that's where the whole attorney comes in and the terminology that me and Justin argue about all the time. Because the court has a different language than you do. The court don't speak like we do, you know. They got different terminology that they use, and if you don't say the right words or you say the wrong words, your words can be twisted around into saying something you didn't say, you know.
All you've got to do is look at the TV when they play clips of anybody, politicians or anybody, they chop and change the whole conversation and put it together and take bits out of it, and it can mean a totally different thing.
Yeah, and if you listen to the whole story...
For something that you haven't said.
Yeah, if you listen to the whole story and took it in context of how it was delivered by the actual person saying it, it wasn't nowhere near what they're trying to say. But they are masters of manipulating your words into fixing fitting their agenda the way they want it. And see, that's where people, these networks out here are really important, where people can start learning things like this, you know, so that they know, you know, best thing is never even talk to them, you know. If you can avoid talking to them, you know, like me feeling like I got to go through the doggone the shopping mall with my hands in the air, you know, because somebody going to accuse me of stealing. I'm not a thief. You know, I wouldn't steal nothing from nobody, but, you know, if I go there and I make the wrong move, somebody come over, I saw you stick something in your pocket, you know, and now you got everybody standing around looking at you like you're a thief, you know? You don't have to be one. All somebody got to do is accuse you of it, and it used to be innocent until proven guilty, and now it's kind of totally opposite, you know? You saw that over there.
She's first to ask questions.
Yeah, you saw that over there in Australia, so it ain't much different there than it is here. All they had to do is say you did it, and then you had to figure out a way to prove you didn't do it. And the fact that you took your cell phone over there to show, look, here's my call log, I wasn't even on the phone during that time. That should have stopped it right there, but it didn't. All they wanted was the money.
That's yep. Right.
And that's why we got the problems. And the alternative energy community out there, it's the same exact thing. You know, we got the technology out there to solve the same issue that they keep so-called claiming that is a problem, you know. If you don't want to burn fossil fuels, then burn water. I mean, when you burn water, what do you get out the exhaust? You get water. So
water, that's right.
Yeah, so why aren't we burning water? You know, but, you know, it all boils down to the almighty dollar and the gangs that run our nations around the world, you know, and it's essentially what they are, armed gangs around the world, basically the mafia in every country out there, the organized crime running the world, you know, if you got...
Well, I think there should be more shows like this to let the people know what's possible and what they can do themselves. I mean, I've been talking to Justin for some time, and even you and Muddy and I've been learning a bucket load of you know, this sort of thing. Which you know, I mean, I'm a plumber by trade, but I've learned that much about, you know, magnetism, the electrical stuff now, tenfold on what I knew, you know, 12 months or more ago. That's really opened my eyes to so many different possibilities. I'm already starting to do a few different things here now. I mean, it's my stuff's trivial to what you guys are doing, but
no, brother. If you understand plumbing, you understand electricity, because it functions the same exact way. You know the difference between a check valve and just a regular valve. You know the difference between pipe diameters and. You know, if you got a lot of water flow in a big pipe and you force it through a small pipe, you raise the pressure. It's the same thing with electricity. You know, you take a thick gauge wire and run a current down through there and force it down into a smaller gauge wire, you're going to bring the pressure and the voltage up. It's the same exact thing. It's funny how nature works. But, you know... And water always finds its level. So does electricity. So do magnetic fields. Everything will balance itself out. And by throwing it off balance, such as taking that big pipe and running it down into a little pipe, you know, you throw it off balance and it raises the pressure up until it squirts out the other side. Once it gets on the other side, the pressure will balance itself out. And there you go. No difference.
One of the things that I hadn't noticed is that, you know, with all the TV programs that they're putting on now, which is a lot of negativity that I see in probably not only, you know, stations on in America, but here in Australia as well. There's so many programs that are doom and gloom. And I was watching a guy the other day, trying to think of what his name was. What was that guy's name, Justin, I said earlier? Bruce Lipton. Now, he gave a lecture and he talks about, you know, stress levels and how it affects people and it makes them sick, and he talked about many things. But, you know, while people are in fear and they're stressed and they're, you know, they're unhappy, they can't think of positive things and they can't, you know, move forward. They can't come up with good ideas, because they're too busy being stressed and afraid and paranoid all the time. And it's no wonder people turn to drugs and violence and all that sort of stuff, because that it's a survival instinct. But all we've got to do on programs like this is teach people what is possible, what they can do themselves, and you know, make them start to, you know, believe in what they can and can't do. You know, it's I tell people, I said, you know, when I was growing up, even as an apprentice, and I'd get thrown into really big jobs, you know, maintenance work, and I remember walking into these giant plant rooms with this major problem with a multi-story building, and I remember going in there going, I don't have a clue what I'm doing. What the hell am I doing here? You know, I was so paranoid, and I had problems working it out. In the end, I realized what I had to do was just to say, no problem, leave it with me, I'll sort it out. And you know what, when I went to that job, everything was clear. I saw the problem, I saw how it all worked, and I solved the problem so easily. And I walk out and I go, how the hell did I do that? And then after a while I realized, all I had to do was tell myself, it's easy, I'll work it out, it's fine, it's not a problem, you know?
Yeah,
and those tasks became easy.
Well, they spent a long time trying to convince you of what's not possible, and always put you in fear of failure. That's why you had that apprehension to even go in there. But if you were left to your own devices and talents, you know your skill, you could have done it with no problem. And that's where you were right. We should keep these networks going like this to inspire people to literally believe in themselves, you know?
Well, what I say to people is, if you turn the television off, you'll get a lot smarter, and you'll learn a lot more, because you're being programmed to be dumb.
Yeah, because it makes people money, you know? Like, Doomsday, that's a prime example. Doomsday date keeps getting moved up, all right? Well, sorry, we were off a month or two. But during the time while Doomsday's on the way, they're selling a lot of camping gear and survival gear and food and fuel, and they're selling it's a money-making deal out there in the doom and gloom area. If you get somebody afraid that their family's going to starve to death, you can sell the heck out of supplies, all right? So tell me our economy's bad when all these people out here are so afraid they're taking their last dollar and going out and buying some crackers to put on the shelf or something, you know, just so that they won't be without, which is always wise. You should prepare for any, you know, emergency or whatever. But the fact that you're being manipulated into not only, stocking up, but into going to war with another nation because they say, well, there's a terrorist behind every bush and we got to go over and get them before they get us, kind of thing, you know? Do you know how many people's lives were destroyed by propaganda and lies?
Mm. Well, that's been well practiced over the decades.
Yeah. You know, and it's a sad state of affairs, you know, when a person can't even enjoy their life. You can't even drive down a road without somebody accusing you of something or a camera in your face, you know. If you go over here to the States, 99.9% of all the people out there don't even pay attention. They're under surveillance from the time they leave their house till the time they get to work and come back home. There are cameras and microphones in every single direction. There's somebody out there putting a database together of all your health, all your criminal, all your schooling, everything there is to know about you. Some sort of alphabet agency in some nation has that on record, so that just such emergency that you might decide maybe you're going to run for office and try to change the corruption, they got every piece of dirt on you possible. You know, or if you step out of line, or if you see something you ain't supposed to see, they know everything that there is to bring you down. And this whole cashless society thing, imagine that. You know, you got a credit card that has all your bank account on. It's connected to all these doggone computers. You go out there, you make the wrong senator or congressman mad, and he makes a phone call, suddenly you ain't got access to your funds anymore. You know, that's control. You know, and the only way that any of these people out here in the average Joe society are ever going to get around this stuff is to stop playing the game that the system has put down in front of you. You know, you can't get away from the system because we're sunk in it. or like in the quagmire or the quicksand or whatever. But in order for us to move towards the future, it's going to take guys like Justin, what Justin's doing over in his little community, you know, putting together their church community and working on alternative energy on a small scale in their own general vicinity, doing that on in their neighborhood, you know? It's like this, if the planet's a mess, you obviously can't run around and clean up the entire planet. It's not within your power to do so. You're just one person. But you could clean up your own backyard and make that backyard look so good that maybe your neighbor sees your backyard, it looks so beautiful, he wants his yard to look the same way. So he'll get out there and clean his yard, and it'll just domino out. And then when it comes
That actually does work.
Yeah.
That does work. You know what, my parents and that, you know, we've had a holiday house and many years ago, and when we started doing that place up and doing all the gardens and everything, everyone used to walk past and make comment, and not long after that, everyone started doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I've even noticed that a bit here, that they do that too. So, you know, I wanted to clean the place up a bit, just so that it didn't, you know, look like it was a you know, an easy target. But if you do it, you know, people go, oh yeah, well I might clean up my place too, and next thing it just dominoes on from there. But the same with knowledge, you know, if you talk to somebody and put the idea into their head that, you know, it is possible that they can do something, they can start somewhere. And the first thing is to get rid of that negativity and start thinking that, you know, they could do something different. You know, that guy Bruce Lipton talks about belief systems, and it was amazing the things that he was saying. And I said to myself, I said, these are things that I've thought my whole life, even from a little kid. You know, I thought, you know, why am I being told this? I used to see so many tradesmen treating their apprentices like dirt. And I, you know, oh, you should, and they give them a hard time about this. And I nearly had a go at a bloke one day. I said, you know, you can't, you know, blame a young kid for not knowing something they haven't been taught yet.
Yeah.
And obviously the problem is yours, because you haven't taught him this yet.
And people,
you know, you have to lead.
People will work a whole lot harder for people that they respect and enjoy being with, as opposed to somebody who's just bossing them around and such.
That's right. Now, I gave the classic example last time. I used to do a lot of martial arts, and the club I was with, the teacher, he had very good morals, and I remember a story about one of the parents coming back to us and saying, you know, what have you done with my son, little Johnny? You know, and we've gone, what? And the parents said, well, he helps with the dishes, he does his homework, he doesn't talk back, he doesn't leave his room in a mess. You know, what have you done that we couldn't do? And we said, well, we've only taught him two things. And they said, what's that? And we said, respect for himself and respect for others.
Yeah,
and once he feels good about himself and that he gets that praise, that, you know, you've tried, so, you know, that's a good job. You know, lead him, say, well, next time you do it, you know, you could do it like this.
Yeah.
Not hound the hell out of them saying how bad it was and da 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 da, because they won't want to try. I noticed that when I was a kid. The more I was praised, the harder I would try. The more I was put down, I didn't want to try at all. You know, and there's probably a lot of people out there listening that are thinking about times when they were younger going, yeah, I remember that, you know, and I didn't want to try either because I was put down all the time. So, you know, you've got to remember that. People are like mirrors. I always say that people are like mirrors, because whatever you put out is what you get back. If you treat someone with disrespect, well, they'll give it straight back to you. You know, if you do the opposite, it throws them off.
In what you just said right there is a solution to show people out there that they actually can make a difference in the world. You know, in the farming communities out there, every single farmer out there always plants more than he needs. You know, he plants enough for the harvest, you know, so that he can earn a living. But he always plants more than he needs, and there's a reason behind all that. Like my father-in-law, he will plant like a whole big old deal with watermelons and squash and different stuff like that, and turnips and potatoes, and his neighbors, whenever it's time for their harvest to come around, continuously bring him over stuff, and he gives them stuff, and their entire community, there's not one person in that entire community that goes without, because they all put the extra effort there to, you know, take care of one another ahead of time. You see what I'm saying?
It's like that movie Pay It Forward.
Yeah, just like that. Because their refrigerators are never empty, you know? And if even in local communities, even if you live right within the city, there's means by which you can garden in your basement, you know? You can garden on the roof or on the windowsill or whatever. And, you know, if you always plant more than what you need, then you got something you can give to your neighbor when they're in need. You see what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And it's that simple.
But, you know, the problem that a lot of the farmers find, you know, they work so hard, but, you know, governments and councils make it so hard for them. And that's why, you know, we're importing so much stuff, importing so much stuff, is because these banks are putting these farmers out of business instead of helping them because of their greed trying to make money. One bad season, and they miss out on a few dollars worth of a payment that they got to make back on their land or their machinery, and they wipe them out.
And that's why, now, if you build a good, strong community, your neighbors will stand with you. When somebody's coming up against you, such as the government, and they're trying to take your property, you know, if you go way back in time, there's this phrase called barn raising. You ever heard of that?
Nope.
Well, let's say you got a farmer, and he's working, he's a community farmer, you know, or whatever, you know, and he's taking care of everybody, and everybody's taking care of him. Well, one day he has a misfortune, and his barn burns down. Every single member of that community will start gathering towards that barn, and they will bring wood and hammers and nails and paint, and they will literally put a new barn right up for that same farmer, who would, if he was on the other side and somebody else's barn burnt down, would do the exact same thing for anybody else in that community. See, that's where the true power is. You know, if you burn your bridges with all your neighbors, you know, you don't like something your neighbor's got in his yard, so you call the law on him, then you can expect, just like you said earlier, if you put out negativity, you get back. Sooner or later, you're going to have something in your yard that he don't like, so he's going to call the government in on you. So,
well, this is one of the things that I've noticed that even my parents talked about of what the neighborhood was like when they were growing up, where, you know, you used to talk with all your neighbors and you were friends with all your neighbors, but now, you know, you don't even know who it is that lives next door because of you know, things like I said earlier with the TV programs, putting the fear in everybody, you know, that everybody's wary of everybody else around them, so nobody talks anymore. They all keep to their own little groups, and you know, here in the country, it's great because everyone that walks past you says hello. In the city, if you did that to somebody in the city, they'd be looking at you really strange, going, "What do you want?" You know. But this is what, you know, society has done. They've made everybody fearful, and they don't look after one another anymore. You know, I remember somebody I knew a long time ago who I was always helping out, and this person sort of was getting a bit strange with me, thinking, you know, what's my problem? And I said, but this is what I do. You know, this is the way I was brought up. We were always helping the neighbours. We were always doing things for people. That was normal. I don't expect anything for it. You know, it makes me feel good to help you out. I don't need anything in return. I just need to know that you're okay and that you're happy and that I've done the right thing.
Yeah.
That's enough for me. You know, like, don't feel weirded out by it. But that's getting too scarce now.
You mentioned that pay it forward thing earlier, And me and my daughter was out for breakfast one time, and I saw this elderly couple sitting across the way over there, and I was watching them, and before they had their meal, they sat down and they said a little prayer of thanks for their meal, and it touched my heart, because I put myself in their position. They didn't look like the wealthiest couple in the world, and they seemed to be respectful to one another and all that kind of stuff. And so I called the waitress over, and I asked the waitress, I said, I want you to help me with something. And she said, what's that? And I said, well, do you see that couple over there? I said, when I leave, I would like to leave the money to pay for their meal. Just let me know how much their deal is, and I'd like to leave the money to pay for their meal plus the tip for the waitress or waiter that's taking care of them. But I want you to wait for me to leave before you tell them that their meal has been paid for. And she recruited one of the other waiters in there to help with the process, but. My daughter's sitting there watching this whole entire deal, and when we got outside and we finally left, they paid for these folks' meal, but it could have been a case that they might have been on their last dollar. They might have needed that extra money for medicine or whatever. Could have been a wide variety, maybe nothing at all. But either way, the whole deal was. When me and my daughter got out in the car and we're driving down the road, she said, why'd you do that, Dad? And I said, because those folks right there, we affected not just ourselves by doing this, but we affected those two people that were having that meal that were thankful, for what they had. And we helped those two, the waitress and the waiter, at the same exact time, because they saw some positivity going out into the world. Somebody just out of the blue doing something kind for somebody else without want of return or recognition. And so they're more apt to go out and do that for somebody else,
That's right.
And
that's right.
And my daughter, she was, she was pretty impressed by that deal,
Taking back, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if they're brought up a certain way, to be selfish, don't think of these things, because that's what they've been brought up with. They don't know anything different. And it takes an act like that to show people, that these things should happen, can happen, and do happen. And when they see the effects of it, all of a sudden, they learn something from it, and they go, oh, what, the world doesn't have to be the way that I thought it was?
I
didn't realize it this way.
I always, I put this out there for people, I've put it out there many times in different community settings, but could you imagine being able to follow a smile from your face to somebody else and see how far that smile actually went? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be cool to literally sit there and be able to follow that and see how far that smile traveled? All the way up until the point when that smile hit a wall of negativity, it would go a long ways. Mm-hmm. You could literally smile from here clear across the other side of the globe, because I smile at this lady who goes out and smiles at some dude who smiles at somebody else and gets on an airplane, flies across to another continent and smiles at somebody else. That one little positivity gesture just made it around the globe. That's how powerful that the individual out there is, and they just don't understand, A lot of people get sad because they feel like they're helpless in society. They can't do nothing to make a difference, but you can,
Well, as long as they don't get the wrong idea and they think you're smiling at them because their fly's undone.
Well, that's part of... That's part of the drawbacks of society, you see somebody walking down the side of the road. In the old days, you know, you'd pick up a hitchhiker, but as time goes on, everybody's afraid to pick up a hitchhiker because it might be a terrorist or a mass murderer or something like that, when in all reality, it's just another average Joe that car broke down, you know, and so they got to walk to the nearest service station or whatever. That's part of that whole fear factor that's been instilled on humanity to keep us away from each other, to not know our neighbors' names. And there's a time you could mention out all your different neighbors that lived in every house, and you could tell what the kid's name was, and you even knew stories about, you know, hey, little Joey down there, he got in trouble in school the other day, and his mom's all mad at him, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of power in knowledge. There's a lot of power in treating people with respect and decency because, it, like you said, man, it comes back to you. No matter which way you send it out, it comes back.
Mm. I mean, I noticed that, you know, that we run a party shop, and there was a woman came in the other day, and her child was very unhappy. And this little girl, you know, she was very miserable. And I said to her, oh, would you like a balloon? No, I don't want a balloon. and her mother said, oh, no, she's you know, really got it, you know, she's really sad today, you know. Anyway, before they left, I asked her what her favourite colour was. No, wasn't going to tell me. No. Anyway, so while her mum was, my wife was busy making up their order for whatever she was getting for something else, for someone else's birthday. So I just went over and I grabbed a nice pink balloon and I blew it up with helium, put it on a thing, and I gave it to her. And I tell you what, that changed her whole day. You know, to see that little girl walk out the shop, you know, with this balloon, and when she first walked in, she was so miserable. You know, I mean, I know it was only like $2.50 or whatever, $2.30 for that, you know, helium balloon, but just to see the look on her face when she walked out that door. You know, little kids remember things like that, you know, and it can change them, you know, as they're growing up.
Yeah,
and it can make better people, little things like that. I mean, look, I'm sure you and myself and many of the listeners will remember a time when they were kids, and, you know, memories that will never leave them of certain gestures that happened to them when they were kids, you know, and I'm not talking about bad things, I'm talking about good things.
Well, you know,
and that memory will stay with them forever.
The best toy that I ever got in my entire life, the best Christmas present that I ever got in my entire life, because ironically enough, even as a child, I understood about people's sacrifice. I was raised up in a poor family, and so I was thankful to get whatever I had. But the best toy that I ever got in my entire life on Christmas morning was a wooden fire truck that was given to me by the Salvation Army, that was donated to the Salvation Army by a group that sat around building wooden toys for yep. kids that were in need. And yep. I loved that little fire truck because when I was holding that in my hand, I knew that somebody in this world took the time out of the kindness of their heart and created this. This was a one of a kind fire truck because, you know, it wasn't built in a factory. It was built by somebody on somewhere in the world out of love, you know. It was individually unique, destined for my hands, and that little fire truck, it made a lasting impression on my life.
But you didn't end up as a fireman.
No, I did. Actually, technically, yeah, I did, because when I was in the Navy, I was a boiler technician, and that falls under the fireman class, so I actually had fireman training. So, yeah, some way I did, but I wasn't ever riding on a fire truck, but anyway. But it did make a lasting impression because it told me, you know, that there, even in the worst possible times, you know, when you were down, there was always somebody out there in the community that was looking out for people just like you, you know. And I think that, you know, instead of driving past that homeless guy with the sign up there, even if that sign says, you know, we'll work for food or whatever, and society has told you that, well, if you give him money, he's just going to go out and buy drugs or alcohol or something like that. You know, instead of you taking and trying to elevate yourself above him and judge him, thinking that maybe that he's going to go out and buy drugs or something with it, or he's just a lazy bum sitting there with a sign. Why don't you just do the humanity thing if you've got extra in your pocket and give that man that deal so that he sees that there's people in this world that actually do care, you know? And
we better still take him into one of those shops and buy him a meal.
Yeah, exactly. You know, give him some dignity, you know? Yeah, it's not...
I've noticed a lot on YouTube, not on YouTube, we've got a Facebook account, not that I really like Facebook much, but... I noticed there's been a lot of clips on people doing things like that. Now, the strange part about it is that a lot of society sees that as a new thing, you know, to be doing kind things for people and you know, putting out these videos how they've helped out people like that. I don't understand why people think this is a new thing. This should be a normal thing that's an everyday occurrence. But, you know, if we can share enough knowledge for people to... help themselves, then people wouldn't need to live like that anymore. So, you know, with all the knowledge that you and the other guys have got, surely, you know, there's things that you can teach people that they could help for themselves, and it'd be good to get their feedback and either write back and say, look, you know, with the stuff that I've learned on your show, I've built this, and maybe send you photos and show you what they've done with things that you've taught them how to do. Or, you know, if they do need help for things, if there's enough questions on, you know, how do I, you know, put out drawings or something like that on how to wire this up or wire that up or join this together or whatever websites to get to, and get their feedback on what they've been able to do and what they've been able to achieve. You know, start small if that's what it takes. I mean, look, that idea you had with that little heated, you know, blower. You know, I've got one in my hand at the moment. I was talking to Justin about it earlier. And I've kept this for many years, and I thought, well, one day I might use that. And then you gave me the idea of putting the hard drive motor onto it and putting the scoop onto it. And after seeing the voltage that you got out of that hard drive motor, I thought, well, you know, for somebody who was good with their hands, you know, you could adapt something like that. That was a great idea.
Yep, it's so, ideas, you know, and possibilities, and the brilliance of what you was talking about there. You know, you put those ideas out into people's hands, and they're going to expand on them and do something about it. But
they can start their own groups. They can start their own groups where they get their friends together and say, "Oh, look, this is what I learned on Shiz's show. Do you want to help me with this project? And can you get wire off your mate down from the factory?"
I would like to expand on that, the thought that you, if people out there have a story that they want to tell, that this is the platform that we put together for just such that. If you got something that you've learned out here and you want to tell your story out there, you could either send me an email. There's plenty of links out there. Drop it in the chat room or send me an email or personal contact on Skype or whatever, and I'll read the story right out over the air to everybody else out there so that your word gets heard. That's what it's all about, you know? And to know that we're doing something positive, you know, if one person tells me that I helped their life or even sparked an idea in their head, I feel good about that because I feel like I've done my job. You know, it's not about self-glorification. It's about knowing that if I can get to one person out there and they can get to somebody else, we can do that pay it forward thing with knowledge and ideas and peace and love and that kind of stuff. And that's how the world's made better. You agree?
Well, if you give them skills, you pretty much put food on their table.
Yep. And that idea about putting the scoop on your car, you know, you could run with that thing. Imagine if you're driving down a road and your alternator goes bad, and you can imagine you can get your car jump-started. You can pull this gizmo out of the trunk, magnetically attach it or however to the hood of your car, and drive to the nearest service station. While you're driving down the road, the wind is blowing through that little turbine and keeping your battery charged up, you know?
I needed that the last time we went back into town to see Mum and Dad.
Well,
the wire off my alternator it broke off the little fitting on the end, and I've got twin batteries in my truck, and they're quite big batteries, and I watched the little voltmeter, and I'm going, uh-oh, and we're in the middle of nowhere, and we finally got to a service station, and I pulled over, and the sad part was that the service stations don't have, well, some of them don't have the necessary bits and pieces anymore, because most of the things are all, chips and crap now. You can get oil and stuff. But I was able to fix it. Luckily, we were able to drive home. But, having one of those little devices on the car, I mean, solar panels are a great idea. Muddy put me into that.
Yeah.
Putting that solar panel on the roof of his car and having his charge controller, I didn't know before I saw that video clip that would not only save you a lot in fuel, because it would take the drag off the alternator.
Yep.
And as well as that, it also charges your battery up. I mean, it gives you excess power, and it saves you a heap on fuel as well as...
And so there you go, man. That's just a small example of what can be done to benefit. Look, if you take one light bulb off the power grid and throw it to a solar and a battery deal, that's one less dollar you're sticking back into the system for the man. Putting that hood on that solar panel on the roof of your car and not having your engine have to work so hard, that's saving you in fuel prices. That's one less dollar going to the man. And one more dollar in your pocket. You see what I'm saying? That's the piggy bank. And it's out there,
There's tons of information out there. There's lots of groups of people now, especially in the States. I don't know so much about here, but there's lots of groups in the States now that are getting together, and these guys that have studied the old ways, from Heaviside and Tesla and lead scaling and all the others, they're putting together all this information now, and they're starting to get certain products out that do work, that are, and the damn things, I've got plenty of them here, and I've mentioned them before about the Tesla Charger stuff.
Yeah.
Not only just their stuff, but there's plenty of guys out there that are putting out really good information, that's actually good, useful information about, it's almost lost technology, but it's a lot of stuff that they don't want people to know, because it's all about making money. Now, we don't have to be buying. I mean, like I say, we have these hard rubbish days here where every year, once or twice a year, they have what's called a hard rubbish day, where you put out all your hard rubbish out the front of your house and they come along and collect it all. And the problem is that when you drive around the streets and you look at all this hard rubbish, it's the same old crap. And the problem is that, we're buying all this stuff from overseas. It's not that, and I'll use the example for China, but it's not that China can't make good products. It's the people that are paying them to make a product for a certain price.
Yeah, they want it to break.
And that's right. I mean, that started in the 20s during the Depression about the planned obsolescence thing.
Yep.
But, they're all designed to last 12 months and that's it. Now, if you ever look out in the hard rubbish days, those same products are out there every year. And the thing is that people are so stupid, they're buying the same products every year. And instead of saying, no, I'm not buying that crap anymore, I'm going to pay the extra money, or I'm going to go without, and I'm going to buy a good, I'll say American product, because I know that there's some amazing companies in the States there that do make some really damn good products. I know Germany and Japan, they make really good products as well. But don't keep buying the crap, and they'll stop sending it over.
Well, let's hold this thought and take this back up when we get on the other side. I want to take a quick music break and let us get a chance to get some fresh coffee and come back with a fresh mind. But I'd like to get back on this subject there, because there's a lot of things, even the worst products out there as far as electronics and stuff, that you could actually salvage out of there,
So, oh, and we do.
And we do, yeah, we do. I see a gold mine when I see a junkyard.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. That's what I said at the scrap guy here.
Anyway, stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to Knights at a Round Table. We're going to take a quick music break, and then we'll be right back at it. So peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
The writing's on the wall. where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble. No pleasure here on earth I find. No friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. It's fairly well, my only lover. I never expect to see you again. Perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. You can bury me in Sunday Valley for many years where I may lay. Sleeping in my grave, while he is sleeping in his grave. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no on God's golden shore. He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We've got Stuart on here and Justin snoozing in the background. It looked like Muddy was in here, but I don't know where he disappeared to. But either way, we were right before the break. We were talking about trash, you know, the trash being like the gold mine out there. You know, every time I go around a junkyard and I see all these old appliances out there, I know that inside of those appliances there are a lot of goodies that could be used for alternative energy stuff, you know, such as there's a friend of mine out there on YouTube, Matthew Drummond. He was showing me some there's a water pump inside some of them washing machines that you can spin up to make a generator, and the higher the RPMs get up there, the more power this thing can produce. And the the direct drive washing machine motors out there, I'm going to try to do a video here pretty soon about those. Those things are really impressive. But a lot of these things that people throw up in the junkyard, you know, or sit out on the curb for the trash man to haul away, there's a lot of good stuff inside there to recycle, you know. Did you know that the little carousel motor inside the bottom of your microwave oven produces electricity? Did you know that? Yeah, well, see, one time I was watching this video out there on YouTube, and this guy was tearing apart a microwave, and he had this this little motor in his hand, and he had a pair of vice grips on the gear right there, and no, he didn't. He had that that little, there's a little triangular thing in it that spins around with the glass sets on. He had that on there, and he spun that around and shocks the crud out of himself. And I'm like, man, there ain't no way in heck he got that bad of a shock out of that thing, right? So I had to find out for myself whether or not he really did get a bad shock out of there. So I took one of those doggone microwave motors, and I was hanging on to the two wires, and I spun that thing up and lit myself up. Man, I was like, holy smokes. You know, what's going on inside there is that, you know, those things are geared for torque in the opposite direction. But when you spin it in the other opposite direction, then those gear ratios go from the large gear all the way down to the small gear and spin that up to some really high RPMs inside that deal, spins that magnet around in those coils and produces electricity. And try it. If you don't believe it, get you one of those doggone little carousel motors out of there, out of the doggone microwave, and hang on to those wires, spin that puppy up, and see if you don't get your hair standing up. But a lot of folks don't know that, you know. There's a lot of things like that out there, you know. Any permanent magnet motor can be turned into a generator. And in those little transformers that you use to plug in your cell phones and stuff, a lot of those have bridge rectifiers in there. So you can take the AC and you can turn it down to where you need it in the DC realm to charge your deal up. So if you got one of those microwave motors that I was talking about, and you take apart one of those little transformers, you don't really have to take it apart. You can just hit those wires directly to the plug-in side of that, and you can crank that thing around by hand and use it to charge your cell phone up. So even when you don't have access to the wire AC power coming from the wall, you can take things out of your appliances that you can use to charge things up with. You know, like
it'd be like those wind up torches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same exact concept. That's exactly how they work. And you don't really have to modify nothing in them transformers. All you have to do is hook the two wires coming out of the doggone back of that motor. And you'll notice that it's a little tough to turn at first. You know, the more you get that battery charged up, the easier it's going to be to turn. But either way, you can still charge up some lights and stuff like that, you know. Put them on your doggone pedal bike while you're pedaling around or whatever. Use that to run your lights on your bicycle or something, you know. There's all kinds of options. And the best part about it is, 9 times out of 10, if you dug it out of the trash, nobody's charging you for it. You see what I'm saying? It's free.
We used to have those on our bikes. Those dynamos.
Yeah. Well, see,
they disappeared a long time ago.
Well, now they're back. All you got to do is find your old microwave and take that doggone thing out of there and hook your little sprocket to it and just kind of put it in line with your chain while you're pedaling your bike. You're charging up. You know, it's going to be AC current coming out, but then take one of those little, Muddy calls them wall warts, that you plug in the wall, the little step-down transformers, and just plug it right into that there and then plug that into whatever it is you're wanting to charge up. And while you're pedaling your bike, you're charging up your batteries for your lights or whatever.
Mm.
You know, it's that simple. That's why, you know, I keep saying that it's way possible to build you a doggone electric car that will recharge itself. It's just how you're moving the energy from point A to point B that's going to do that, right? You know, we know that, with Lenz's law, the back EMF that everybody tries to get around, you know, we know that's obnoxious, so we figure out a way around that. It's easier to ship high voltage than it is a lot of current and watts and stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So, instead of trying to run it directly off the generator, like let's say your bicycle has a motor generator, it has a hub motor on there, but you actually got a couple phases. One of the phases you're going to use to charge your batteries up. But you would think that if you start pedaling this thing, and the moment you flip the switch on, Lenz's law would take effect and throw you on your face because it would act like a brake and stop it. But if you're not taking that energy directly in through the load, instead you're changing the form of that energy into something else, like just shipping the high voltage off into, you know, something like plasma argon to turn it into plasma. It's still the same energy. You're just not getting the back EMF, so therefore it's never really under a load. You know, it's only when you put it under a direct load that Lenz's law takes effect. And so ship the energy away from where you're at. You know, you can you can, heck, you could probably even take a Windsurf design and, you know, all it needs is one disc to fit, spin in the opposite direction. So if you got one spinning forward when you're riding your bike and the other one stationary, essentially they're going in the opposite directions and you're building up a static charge. That static builds up and then shoots off into a capacitor and then bleeds over into your battery banks. And worst case scenario, it makes your batteries last a bit longer because you know instead of using up all the energy, you're still actually putting something back in. You see what I mean?
I like that idea you had of putting the LED lights straight on the solar panel.
Yep.
Facing the solar panel, covering the whole solar panel with the LED lights facing the actual panel.
Yeah.
That'll do lenses law if you're transmitting light into power that way.
Yep. And basically all you're doing is changing the energy. It's like I was saying, you can't run your car on water, all right? But the moment you take that same water and you vaporize it, now you got a different thing going on there. You could you could separate
for that.
Yeah. Well, like this.
A lot of people are actually using way too much energy by splitting the water into hydrogen and oxygen to make a fuel to put it in their car. But the problem is they can't make enough of it. And there's people out there that have come up with a way where if they have a plasma spark, which isn't too difficult to get, where you can actually take the top of the spark plug and open it right out using a series of diodes and what was the thing that he used? It was Aaron Murakami's thing, where he used multi-spark ignition system.
Well, Stan Myers did it back in the 70s, in the late 70s, and how he did it was he built a customized injector that would take the water and put it into a really super fine mist, like a fog, all right?
Yep.
And then he hit it with a high-frequency radio wave that instantaneously separated the hydrogen and oxygen and ignited it on demand with the heat of the piston.
And it expanded it.
Yeah. So, whereas you couldn't normally run your car on water, but once you change the state of that water, now that water becomes combustible because it's hydrogen and oxygen. The farmers used to do it. When they get their tractors up to operating temperature, they'd shoot in a fine mist of water and burn that doggone water to save on fuel. So the same thing applies with electricity. You know, maybe this plasma couldn't run your car because your electric motor because your electric motor isn't on the same frequency. It's not designed to run on that. But you take that plasma, take the energy off that plasma in multiple different forms. One way is what you could take it off in the form of heat because plasma produces heat. That's how those... fluorescent bulb starters work. When high voltage is coming in there, it energizes the argon inside that tube into the plasma state. There's a little thermal switch inside there that when that thermal switch gets hot enough, it makes contact and lets the power go to the elements on the bulb. Then inside a fluorescent bulb, the only purpose for the tungsten in there is a preheater to warm up that gas to get it to light faster. But it's already been proven. Many people have done it already wirelessly with Tesla coils. Is the frequency coming off there is high enough to energize that gas and light up that bulb. So we're not talking about anything different. We're just talking about moving energy from one to another. And it was cool right there on YouTube. This guy was doing this deal where he had fluorescent bulbs and he took some aluminum tape. He left the paper on the back of the aluminum tape but folded it around and sealed the other into, basically he had a sliding capacitor on a fluorescent bulb. Well, I thought that was really cool because you can actually run a bridge rectifier to that and take that energy off of that, and while you're sending the energy wirelessly to the bulb and lighting that bulb up, you can turn around and charge up batteries with that using that system. Well, when I did this show out there at the church get-together out there, the Day in the Country out here, they have this deal where it's alternative living and energies and stuff like that. They asked me to come out every year. Well, I was showing with a Van de Graaff generator, I was showing these kids how you could actually light up a light bulb with it. And I had my finger on one of those pieces of tape, and the other end, other hand at the other end of that bulb, and it had an amplification effect to the energy coming out of there, because normally you could hold that with your hand and it would, you know, you could feel it. But this time, when my hand was on that, such as like putting your finger on both prongs of a capacitor, it gave me quite a jolt, you know, coming off a Van de Graaff. And so, you know, there's a whole lot of ways to take that energy from the plasma state and put it right back into something that your motors can recognize. You know, you dump it down into a capacitor. Capacitors can be used as batteries. If those capacitors are connected to a battery bank, you can bleed that energy off of that capacitor bank down into those batteries, and then you can run inverters off of those batteries in order to run your appliances. Pretty cool stuff, man. But in that process, you're not invoking Lenz's law through the entire deal. You see what I'm saying? So, there's, like I said, all this stuff, even the fluorescent bulbs. How many of those have you seen going to trash?
Thousands. Where I used to work, they throw out thousands of them, you know, every month. They only keep them up there for a short period of time, and they change them over. And even the LED lights, they were doing the same thing. Now, I thought that most of these LED lights had a lifespan of 50 to 100,000 hours, but they changed them anyway.
Well, there's something about LEDs that I found out. And you have to try this out yourself to believe it. I burned an LED up. I knew the LED was bad. All right? And so I was going to throw the doggone thing in the trash, but I had, for some reason, left it sitting down by this doggone Slayer exciter that I was messing with. And I'll be doggone that thing didn't light up anyway. Because the material inside that LED, all it cares about is an electron interacting with the photons inside there. That's all. It interacted with that material. And that doggone burn-up LED that would not work on a regular power source still lit up. Like, how's that possible? You know? But the energy was literally jumping across the gap inside there. You know, the little tiny, tiny element inside the LED was burnt, and that's why the LED wouldn't work on the original current. But there was enough energy coming off that flare exciter to literally light up that doggone burn-up LED. You see what I'm saying?
It was strong enough to jump the gap.
Yeah. And so the electrons were still interacting with the material in there and releasing photons of light.
I noticed Raymond put out a video, and he went out and bought a lux meter because he had one of his viewers didn't believe that he was getting the same amount of light, so he went out and bought a lux meter and then did a video of it, you know, showing what sort of light he was getting off. He was taking off. He started off, I think, with 10 bulbs, and they were joined in series, end to end, and he took off what, two at a time or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was running that off that
Beckett oil burner igniter.
That oil burner, yeah.
One of the key things about all that is all of those bulbs were dead bulbs that would have normally been in the trash. So even if he wasn't getting as many lumens off of it as you would be on the standard system, it's still quite impressive, because normally this would have been trash. And as long as that gas is in that bulb, and as long as that vacuum never seal is never broken, those bulbs will last forever. And so all you need to know is that you can even light them up with a static charge. If you can keep a static charge constant, you can keep that light, instead of blinking on and off, you can keep it constant. So a good old Van de Graaff generator or Windsor style or even a Lord Kelvin style or a Lord Hawksby device, any of those older that were way back in the 1800s and before, produce a high enough static charge that it can still energize that gas and light it up. So you're, as far as I'm concerned in the alternative energy portion of the deal, the lighting issue solved. All you need is a strand of LEDs or fluorescent bulbs, and you know all you got to do is produce a high enough voltage to keep the frequency up there and keep those bulbs lit up. So take all your light bulbs off the system, put them on a completely different power source. You know, imagine a windmill that was built up to only produce high voltage, no current, you know, no serious wattage or amperage or anything like that. Just nothing but strictly high voltage. Voltage is pressure, and the only thing that those bulbs are looking for is a frequency or an electron. And once that interacts with it, you're going to get visible light. So you know that windmill out there don't even have to work hard in order to give you light. And then
we got a visitor.
Huh?
Have we got a visitor?
It looks like Muddy showed up. Is he out of bed? Muddy, are you there? Turn your microphone on. Man, he went back to sleep. Him and Justin, I swear, they get more sleep than any of us. They should be really beautiful right now, getting all that beauty sleep, right?
Muddy's been very busy lately.
Yeah? What's he been up to?
He's been working on his tower, and he's been doing all sorts of chores around the place. I've been trying to convince him to have a good clean-up around his house and build his own workshop at his house.
Yeah, that's what he should do. Anyway,
he's got too many irons in the fire.
On the whole recycling thing out there, there's a lot of things if you learn about what's inside of some of these old appliances. I mean, heck, you know, recycling the copper wire inside there, you know, the only thing that ever goes wrong with an electric motor is the insulation on the wire fails. That's it. The motor gets too hot, the insulation fails, and instead of 1,000 turns of copper wire, you're down to 1 turn. And so it's a short. The motor gets hot and it fails, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you had a way that which you could literally take off all that wire and then re-insulate it, let it dry up and roll that wire back on, that motor would work just like it did before. And you know the electric motors inside your doggone car that sometimes fail, and then you try to roll your window up and it won't go up? Those motors are nearly indestructible, but yet people take them out of their car and go out and buy a new one because they figure that one's burned up.
Are you usually the switch?
No, usually it's if you take the look on the back of those motors, you'll notice that there's two little bent tabs on the side that hold all the guts of that electric motor inside there. Straighten out those tabs and carefully slide the guts up out of there. You'll notice that inside there it's all black and cruddy. That's because all the times you rode your window up and down, the carbon has scraped off those brushes and has mixed with the grease inside that motor, and now the brushes aren't making contact with the rotor like they're supposed to. And so it's basically a dead short because you got all this carbon mixed with the grease. It's shorting itself out. You clean all that grease up out of there and put fresh grease inside there and then turn around, put that sucker back together. It will work just like brand new. Save you a lot of money. All it is just a little bit of effort. I mean, heck... What would you rather spend, $60, $70 to get one from a salvage yard and replace it, or take about 5 or 10 minutes and pull the guts out, clean it out, put it all back together, and have it work again?
Sometimes the hardest part is just getting the cover off the door.
Yeah, that's because they make all these nifty little hidden snaps and clips. And
then you end up destroying the door panel. Don't worry, my wife's car, we had the same issue with that. Trying to work out how to get the skin off the door just to get inside because the window winder We didn't have an electric window. Actually, we did have electric windows in it, and we're having problems with it. But it turned out that the actual window motor only had three big pop rivets holding it into the frame, and two of them, well, one or two of them were broken. And I ended up having to replace the bolts. I put little short bolts back in and fixed it. But the trying to get that door skin off, if you don't, you know, if you're not doing it all the time to know where they hide all those screws, you can end up doing a fair bit of damage, and a lot of them are very hard to repair.
Yeah.
And it costs you quite a lot of... I mean, my old truck is a 1979 model F-Series truck. And to get a new door skin for that, like an original new door skin for that, even though it's only plastic, is like $300.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And you just go, man.
Well, they build these cars in layers, man. If you want to try to get down to one sensor, you got to take half the motor just to get down to it. It's crazy.
Well, that's why I like the old cars. You'll never see me in a new car.
Yep. So, anyway, Muddy, you got your microphone on yet? Man, he's probably over there talking to us, and we can't even hear him.
I just sent him a message asking him where he is.
Anyway, there's a lot of things out there that you could save. I even lit up a regular tungsten element headlight lamp. Actually, if you go back and see some of my videos, I use that lamp as a vacuum spark gap for my Tesla coils. And you can watch, that doggone thing will light up using that Beckett oil burner igniter, because it literally jumps across the gap and vibrates the tungsten regardless of whether or not it's severed or not. So even a junk light bulb will still light up with the right frequency going through it. So, that's why I don't throw anything away. You know, somebody asked me one time, because they saw a video in my labs, that asked me if I was a hoarder.
And your response to that was, and proud of it.
Yeah, I save everything, because why waste it? I mean, if people talking about saving energy and reducing your carbon footprint, just think about all those appliances that you're throwing in the trash that have to be rebuilt. That means that somebody out there is expending fuel in order to make it again, you know. And so,
well, I've learnt that microwaves have a dual life. Not only can you use them when they work, but after they stop working and you throw them out, you can use the motor drive for the glass plate on the bottom, and you can use the transformers in them for your Tesla coils and stuff.
Yeah, and you can take the casing and build a solar dehydrator.
Mm.
So
Faraday cage.
Yeah. So there you go, man. Nothing goes to waste. Even the metal on the casing. If you needed another project, you could salvage some of the metal off the casing to make other projects. There's magnets inside of the doggone magnetrons inside the microwaves. There's light bulbs inside there. There's copper wire and switches and relays and all kinds of stuff inside there. Old washing machines, same thing, you know, switches, relays, refrigerators, the same thing in there, you know. And
Muddy uses a compressor and a refrigerator to pump up the tires on his car.
Yeah, those...
I said, don't you have a normal one? He says, why would I need one of those? This works just fine.
Yep. And those compressors in there run off 110 volts, so all you got to do is hook a hose to the doggone thing. There you go. Put a filter on the input side so it ain't sucking crud down in there, and it'll last for years. So one man's junk is another man's treasure. There is a solution right out there. And you know, the more of that kind of stuff, that's why I do my YouTube channel the way that I do it, is every time I find something out there that, you know, it can even, like the hard drive motors, who would have ever guessed that you could get that much voltage out of a hard drive motor just by spinning it up at a high RPM, you know? Yeah. If you look inside there, there's hardly any copper wire in there. I mean, it's just a tiny little coil in there. And the magnets in there, you could pull that thing apart and try to attach a screwdriver to it. It's barely got any attraction to the doggone screwdriver. The magnets in there are so weak, it ain't funny, but yet it's able to produce that much voltage. That's pretty impressive, if you ask me.
I'd be curious on the limit.
I don't think there is a limit. I think the higher you could bring those doggone RPMs up without that thing coming apart at the seams, I would love to see somebody spin that up to a couple hundred thousand RPMs just to see how much voltage would actually come up out of there. I think there's a whole lot more going on in an electric motor than meets the eyes. We use everything inefficiently. You know, we're right now using a brute force magnetic field to shake loose electrons to get the electric flow and all that kind of stuff. But something different was going on inside there. Once you get past a certain RPMs, it almost acts as if it's creating a Venturi effect. It's actually bringing energy in from the environment around it that is just magnifying it, you know. Something's going on there. It's worth checking out, because those direct drive washing machine motors that we're talking about, you know, I got one that I got the other day, and man, I was sitting there lighting up a 150-watt light bulb just by spinning it with my hand. You know, imagine if you crank that thing up to over 5,000 RPMs, how much voltage that thing would put out. And there's a video out there on YouTube of somebody using one of them Fisher & Paykel washing machine motors connected to a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton, and he was shooting some serious arcs off of that thing. I'm talking about deadly arcs, things that would start a fire kind of arcs. So, you know, there's a lot of power potential there. And if Gerard Morin's correct, and I believe he is, then electricity would be need to be redefined in what it actually is, because he took a 2,500-watt gasoline generator, connected it to a 50 kV transformer, and had that 50 kV transformer drop down into a 25 kV transformer, and he was running way more than 2,500 watts off of that thing. And I was listening to that motor, because what I wanted to know is, once he put that thing under load, I wanted to see whether or not that doggone generator was bogging down. And if you listen to that video, that generator never even budged. It just stayed continuous. So he was taking that energy, putting it into that transformer, and basically changing the frequency of that energy. And he even did something that linemen won't do. He had an amp meter that he put across the top of that thing, and anybody knows anything about those power poles out there and the pig poles there, the transformers on the top, you wouldn't get your hand that close to that top piece, because that thing would arc across and kill you. You know, they have to be really careful when they're changing them lines out, especially if that line's live. But he put an amp meter around the top of that, and nothing. And he's producing enough wattage to run several space heaters and a skill saw, and I can't remember what else he was running off of that thing, which should have bogged that generator down to where it is, you know, working overtime. But it didn't. So if you get a chance to look at Gerard Moore, and he's working on a motor generator system over there, and he explains it out real good. And he's also talked about, you know, when you're trying to generate, if you got the same size electric motor and you're trying to generate electricity with one while running the generator head off of the other, well, you got the same size generator, so the one is going to bog the other one down. But if you use a concept such as what you would do with leverage, and your motor that you're running, your generator head, is larger than the generator head itself, then you see where it starts to change the difference there. That bigger motor is capable of a lot more torque, and it can overcome the back EMF of the generator, the smaller head. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
It's kind of like putting, you know, if you go try to lift a rock with your bare hands, it's too heavy to move. But then you could take and use some leverage and a long pole to pull that rock up off the ground. Same thing with that generator. You know, you got a bigger motor that you're actually running, and you're turning a smaller generator head, so the torque is able to overcome the back EMF on that, and the energy that's capable of producing is more than you need on the other side. So he's even thinking that you could actually get this thing to run itself if done correctly, and I believe him. What do you think?
Well, I've written his name down now. How do you spell that?
Gerard, G-E-R-A-D, or A-R-D, something like that. Morin, M-O-R-I-N, I think.
Oh, Morin. Okay.
I think if you just get it in the general vicinity on Google, then you'll be able to find him. But he's doing some brilliant work. And Matthew Drummond's the one that made me hip to this guy, because Matthew was taking these little pump motors and he was spinning them up to high RPMs and charging batteries and stuff up with them. And the higher the RPMs you get these things, the better the things work. You know, it's like I said, it's easier to move high voltage than it is to move high current and stuff like that.
So are you able to talk about what you've got coming up?
Well, I got a couple different experiments that I'm working on that have to do with magnetic fields that are going in opposite directions. That I'm working. It's kind of hard to explain. What I was talking about earlier about the brute force magnetic field and how the lines of flux actually cross through a coil wire to induce a current flow and stuff like that. I'm running some tests about spinning a couple of discs that have magnetic magnets on them in opposite directions to see if that vortex that would be created by the magnetic fields going in the opposite directions would actually increase that effect that you would get. You see what I'm trying to say here?
I just noticed Muddy's having some problems.
Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, Luke. Okay.
Anyway, Lenz's law. Whenever you induce a current in a coil wire, it creates opposing magnetic field that is fighting against the one that you're trying to use, right?
Yep.
And so what if you can take and instead of allowing that field to come around and fight with each other, create another field that balances it all back out? You see what I'm saying? Where you still are getting the same amount of flow. Does that make any sense to you?
Yep.
Well, that's one of the deals I'm working on, and I'm actually going to try to use one of these large direct drive motors to pulse a an extremely large Tesla coil. And I'm going to try to use everything that's out there, from wind power to solar power, to keep the batteries charged up and be able to basically just turn this thing on and just leave it on. If you go back and watch my Free Thinker video series so far, and you see all that junk out there, and I ask the question whether or not it's just yard art or what would they do with it and that kind of stuff. The lighting inside that thing have been going on since the very first video where you actually saw light in that thing. And so right now I think we're looking at a couple months and it's still been on. So,
do you have any measurements on the power consumption of that?
No. Basically...
Wattage bulbs that you're running?
The lighting that you're seeing in there are basically set up for cars, like those runner lights that you see on kids fancy up their cars. They put these LED lighting systems underneath the deal and makes the rear end light up or whatever. And so it's a 12-volt system, and basically if you left your dome light on in your car for several months, then it only takes a couple of days and your battery would be flat, right?
Yep.
Well, the key about all this is, because I understand how the LED technology works, it don't take a lot. All you got to do is keep the right voltage going on inside there, and as long as those electrons are interacting with that material inside that LED, you're going to keep the light on. And the batteries that are being used in there, on the one power source, there's a meter on there, and you push that meter, and it still says zero on it. So those lights shouldn't be on, all right? But the batteries themselves, all these batteries are bad batteries that won't hold a full charge. But this thing is still on after all this time. And because it's been used in a whole different manner, who was on here last time? the dead batteries, think about a capacitor for a second, all right? What is a capacitor? It's a couple plates with a dielectric in the center of it. You know, dielectrics can be anything from glass to plastic to paper to even the atmosphere itself. And so what do you got inside of a battery? You got positive and negative plates, and normally you have some sort of electrolyte in there, or you know, battery acid, and basically you get a chemical reaction that keeps that battery charged up. Well, what if that battery's bone dead dry, right? You still have the negative and positive plates in there. What would you say if I told you that you could still hold a charge on those things? Would that sound crazy?
No, that makes sense. I guessed that the last time.
Yeah, see, you're the one that guessed it. That's how I couldn't remember. That's right, you're the one that guessed it. I couldn't remember who did it. But
come on.
There you go. Yeah, my memory's shot. But anyway.
We're the same age, that's right. Don't worry, I know what you're talking about.
It's a capacitor. A dead battery is a capacitor. And every battery out there has potential charge. Even a completely dead battery has just as much potential energy in it as a fully charged battery. See, when I talk about nature balancing itself out, you know, like water finding its own level, the same thing applies with energy, you know. There's just as many electrons in that those plates as there were before. They're just all leveled out. You see what I'm saying? And if you put a static charge on that thing, or using a negative ion generator or anything else like that, you can actually put a charge to those do those deals, because you put those plates off balance. One of them has more electrons than the other now. And in order to balance themselves back out, the moment you turn the load on, those electrons will go back to the other direction and they will balance themselves out. But regardless, when it's all said and done, when that battery's bone dry, it still has just as much potential energy as a fully charged battery. Does that make any sense to you? So, you know, like copper wire. When you're running your lights, your copper wire isn't getting smaller. It still has just as many electrons as it did whenever you started. Everything just balanced itself back out. Lenz's law, the magnetic field inside there, what's going on whenever that field is being interacted is everything is realigning itself, you know? And once it finds its balance, bam, you got a dead stop. It's a break, you know? And so if you never enact Lenz's law, you never invoke it, you never allow it to occur by shipping that energy away from the generator, you're not having that problem. But regardless, when you shut that thing off, you still have just as many copper electrons as you had to start with in there. Isn't that weird? Their own laws of physics proves free energy. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Does that sound familiar? But you can change it. You can change it. You can move it around, but you're not going to get any more. You're not going to get any less. So while we're moving it around, we're getting work done in between. So if with that said, if I take the energy off that generator and I put it into a completely different state of matter, I still got the same amount of energy. Whenever I boil a cup of water into steam, wherever that steam is the same amount that I had in that cup. It just might be expanded out, you know. But once it's all condensed back in, it'll be the same amount of energy that it was to start with. And same thing with hydrogen. Huh?
I'd say the same thing as what goes on in a battery.
Yep. So all you're doing when you charge a battery up is you're throwing nature off balance. And nature is sitting there, you know, you got all this charge on one side, and nature's waiting for a path. All right? The moment nature has a path to go from one side to the next, it will literally, basically, once you turn that light on, those electrons will begin flowing back the other direction. Depending on the resistance that is in between each one of those plates will determine how fast that battery will charge down. If you got a really thick path where a lot of electrons can flow, it ain't going to take long for that battery to balance itself back out and be at what we would classify a dead battery. But if you put...
As long as you don't force it.
Yeah. And if you overcharge it, then nature will arc that battery from one pole to the next, and bow, it'll shut itself down instantaneously, just like a capacitor discharging. It all balances itself out. And so using everything that we know from all the basic science and electricity, all we're doing when we're producing energy to use is we're throwing nature off balance, and on the swing back, we're getting work done. That's it. We ain't changed the wind just because it turned the turbine. We ain't took away from the wind. It's still the same amount of energy on the other side as it was to start with. We just use that work in between there, that motion in between there to get work done. Once people figure that out, and they figure out, I'm sitting here trying to tell them that I don't care about current watts and amps, and I start a ruckus because they, you know, oh, well, you can't do no work without current watts and amps. And I'm saying, well, look, at this point in the game, like that machine that you've seen with their blower motor and then the squirrel cage fan and the X13, between the blower motor and the squirrel cage fan, there is no physical connection between the two. So even if I stop that squirrel cage dead in its track to where it can't do nothing, it's still that blower motor is still going to use 120 volts AC. It's still going to be pushing out the same amount of air. Nothing changes in that system. So at that stage in the game, there's no direct coupling back. So all I know, I have to be able to produce 120 volts AC to keep that fan motor going. All right? Yep. And then from the generator head side of it, now I want the energy that's being produced inside this generator head, but I know that the moment I put on a turn the light switch on, that load is going to send some of that energy right back into that same generator head and invoke Lenz's law. So how do I get around this? I take that energy out of it, which is going to come out of that, regardless of whether it's on the tip of your finger or through a load, you know. It's going to come out of there because you throw nature off balance. Nature's trying to find a path back and to level everything out. Well, if I take that energy from that generator head and I change the energy to a completely different form, such as the fourth state of matter being plasma, using any of the inert gases out there, and in all actuality, you could use any gas out there, even combustible ones, as long as it's in a vacuum. It won't blow up in your face, but I prefer using the safe ones for obvious reasons. So I move that energy into a totally different state, and now I have the same amount of energy that that generator was capable of producing in a total different form of energy. Now I need to move that energy to another state that can get it back to where to recognize. I could either take the heat off the plasma to either heat up water and move it away from in the form of heat, and back until I turn that heat with thermocouples or thermopiles back into usable current that I can charge my battery banks up and run my inverters on. What do you think?
It sounds like a plan. The Muddy's just sent me a message. He's having some issues, and he just sent me a message. Someone call him direct, and it should straighten out. Then he can rejoin the group. I tried to add him again, but it's not working. But if you can call him direct, you might be able to get him on.
Well,
it sounds like he's got something.
I think Justin's the one that started this call, but I'll try to put him in here. see if that works.
Yep, Muddy's calling me now.
All right, well, we're trying to get some communications going on with Muddy Muddy Mud Man there. So I think I'll throw on a tune and we'll get that sorted out and come back. How's that sound? All right, stay tuned, everybody, listening to the Knights of the Round Table.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
turbo. All rise for the king, Shazam the turbo, and the Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah, that's right. Old King Shaziz the Terrible rules with an iron fist on his kingdom. He used to call me King Shaziz the Squishy. Anyway, we finally got Muddy awake and we got his microphone turned on. Say hi, Muddy.
Hi.
Hi.
Boy, I tell you what, he's really happy to be here. Kind of like Steve yesterday. Don't get too excited. We wouldn't want you to hurt yourself.
Wow.
Anyway, before you woke up, we were talking about recycling appliances out there that you could use to actually generate energy and stuff like that. And we talked about a lot of stuff, man. We was kind of like all over the table there. So, anyway, it's all brilliance. You know, the way that we use electricity in this world is inefficient, and if we learn how to work within the parameters of the so-called laws of physics or work in harmony with nature, then we can get stuff done without all the hassles and all the pollution. So there's one solution out there. And so, you know, with that said, that, you know, there's possibilities, and even in a junk pile you'll find possibilities. You know what I mean?
You know, I walk around the store, you know, like Tractor Supply and stuff like that. You just look at all these things and say, wow. And that's where you get your ideas of what you want to build. And when you tear things apart, you don't have to have a reason to pull them apart. Just pull them apart. And then when you got them, then you're looking around and say, ooh, I got this and this and this. You'll find something.
Well, if you know what's going in the trash anyway, and you're going to clog up the landfill and go to waste, then... You know, even in the auto glass industry, when I was back in the day when I was younger and I was working in an auto glass, they threw away thousands of dollars worth of auto glass. But if you wanted to make an alternative power source or even a heat source, imagine you had a couple windshields and some old wood or whatever, and you built a box. You know how hot it gets inside your car in the middle of the summertime?
Yeah, you get well over 200 degrees.
Yeah.
A turkey.
And so, using the basic laws of science that you know about, or basic science, then you know that heat rises, and you could send that heat up a turbine, or you could use it for a solar dehydrator, or use that heat to pump up inside your house, you know. Make you a heat box outside, and run that ductwork up underneath the underneath your house, up into the basement, and that heat will rise up the deal, so, you know. When it's outside anyway and the sun's going to be out there anyway, you might as well use that sunlight to throw a little extra heat in there. And if your thermostat doesn't have to kick on as often, then guess what? You save a penny or two. Maybe even a dollar.
You know, one of these people were cleaning out their storage down there at the storage place. And they had a whole bunch of these fiberglass rods about 5 foot long. And either 5 or 6 foot long. And I was looking at those things, solid fiberglass, 1 inch thick. And I was saying, wow. They said, yeah, I'll take them. And I took them, and I've been sitting there, and, you know, every time you move them, your fingers itch and all that kind of stuff. For an idea for them, I finally got the idea. Geodesic dome. I'm going to need a greenhouse come this winter. So, yeah. Down here at Newspaper Drop, they wrap the pallets with that big wide roll of saran wrap. And I'm thinking about just going down there and start unwrapping the pallets and nice and easy and rolling that stuff up. I won't have to have anything to cover it. I'll have it right there. It'll stick to just about anything. Well, shouldn't be all that hard to do.
One of my friends did pretty much the same thing that you're talking about, built a greenhouse. He took a couple old rebars with that steel reinforcement rod that you use for bracing up concrete, cut him off some sections, and then used some PVC plumbing that he'd stake one down in the ground on one side, loop that up over and stake the other one down and plug it right in, and then he tacked plastic to each one of these loops and built him a greenhouse out of it.
That's what I did 2 years ago. But I used you have to either use red or blue tarp, and that's what I used because it still let the sun through. I mean, they thrived. They did okay. On warm days, I just pull the tarp back and let it get some real sunshine. And I kept a 75 watt bulb in there at night, and that kept everything from freezing. That's not too bad.
Yep. You know, just the solar alone will keep things from freezing up inside there. You'd be surprised how much warmer it is inside a greenhouse than it is outside. But, you know, knowing all that and knowing things like the Peltier element, which work on temperature differences, you know, you could have a Peltier element glued up against the wall of that greenhouse. You know, it's going to be warmer inside than it is outside, so even if it's only a trickle charge, you're still getting a little bit of energy coming out of it that way, you know. Some old crummy solar panels.
You can take a bunch of straw and line the whole ground with the straw and throw some coffee grounds on that, and it will stay warm.
And where do you get Peltier elements if you're salvaging?
The 12 volt coolers that truckers get, and you plug them into the cigarette lighter. They put the plug in one way and it becomes a heater, and the other way it becomes a cooler.
Yep.
So you see them things all thrown on the side of the road. You see a cooler that's got a cord coming out of it. That's where you get them. You get them out of there. They work real good. I used to collect a bunch of them.
You ever wondered why nobody ever decided to make a emergency 12-volt stove top with some of them Peltier elements?
When you get them that hot, it kind of destroys them. But you can get some nice heat out of them.
Hey, if you're just trying to warm something up, then you can bring it up to enough temperature. You can find out how hot you can get them things before they finally burn up. And I'm sure, 100, 200 degrees is hot enough.
Oh yeah.
So who knows?
I like making refrigerators out of them, but I like to turn the heat sink where the cold side is in a pan of water.
Yeah.
And man, that really works. That works real good. You just kind of have a little, get a 2-liter jug and you stick a piece of PVC in it. You stick it to the bottom of that pan. When the pan starts to dry up, it lets more water into it.
Well, either way, even though some things might have limitations, at least if you know what things can and can't do, even old car tires, man, you could turn an old car tire into a solar heater.
Yes, Stuart has. he put a bunch of grass clippings, and he's got the shop across the way there, giving them coffee grounds to help the process.
Well, I remember the first time I remember the first time in the middle of July jumping in the back of a pickup truck. We were all going down to the swimming hole, and it was sunny outside, and there was a tire that looked like it would be a perfect place to sit down in the back of that pickup truck. And boy, as soon as I sat down with my swimming shorts on, it burnt my biscuits.
Yeah.
Yep. And the thing about rubber is it seems to be able to hold heat for quite a while. You know, there's other materials out there. Look at the catalytic converter on how that thing actually functions. When that thing gets hot, a catalytic converter, they can get extremely hot. And they will hold heat for hours after you shut that car off.
Well, I know. I used to cut them for a living and resell.
Yeah.
Back to the recycling distributor.
So knowing that, you could use that knowledge to literally build you a stove that, you know, you like you're going to cook wood or whatever. You know, you could cook something, burn some firewood, and you take the heat off your firewood up and through one of those doggone catalytic converters, which you're not going to have to worry about rebreathing the air. It's going to go back up to the pipe anyway. That catalytic converter just became a perfect stove top where you can cook your eggs and stuff on it.
I put a can of raviolis on the manifold of my car and took a trip.
See? My uncle, back when he was alive, he put his coffee pot up on the manifold and boiled his coffee while he's driving down the road.
Mm-hmm. They had an article where the scout leader would sit there and he took his exhaust system and he made a box where the exhaust went around an inner box, and he'd throw a bunch of food in that little oven, and when they got to where they were going to camp, and they'd sit there and chow down.
I sat there and talked to a couple guys about some cars and alternative energy, and we got into this over unity discussion, and I said, you know, you got a piece of over unity sitting right there in front of your face. You drive to and fro work every day in it. And he said, well, how do you figure that? I said, do you know that if you take the radiator out of that car or take the fan off of that doggone thing, that that thing will produce enough heat to literally melt that block and destroy that engine? There's a lot of energy going on through an automobile. There's a lot of wasted energy. That heat's got to go somewhere. Yeah.
You know how much energy is wasted?
A lot.
From the explosion inside the cylinder, only 5% of it makes it to your rear wheels.
Yep.
5%.
So, what if you took that same car and you modified the injectors instead of to send it into a jet, you're sending it into a super fine mist, and everybody knows that the more you atomize something, the better it burns. That's why they tell you not to walk into an old grain bin or an old barn and light up a smoke, because you're liable to blow yourself into the next dimension.
Right.
You know. So, you know, why shove a whole bunch of gas in there if you know that that cylinder is moving so doggone rapidly, there's no way for you to physically burn that fuel up fast enough to not have wasted exhaust. So if you put it in a super fine mist inside there and you ignite that, and you're going to be burning up the majority, if not all of it, if you get it tuned just right, you're going to be burning up every single bit of that fuel that you send down there and not have no trashy exhaust coming out. You know, Stan Myers was doing it back in the 70s, right? He was riding around in a dune buggy, all right? And he was burning water. He didn't have salt in his water or anything like that. He was burning straight water in that thing. And the reason why is because he knew how the physics of water worked. He basically separated the hydrogen oxygen on demand. He built the customized atomizers that sent that water into that cylinder at a super fine mist. And the heat of the cylinder and the high frequency that he sent through there to instantaneously separate that fine mist into its two components, and the combustion inside there was perfect. And he was able to run that doggone thing on demand, and we should be using that technology here today. Because when you burn water, you get water out the other end.
Yep.
So...
Yeah, he had a deal that measured the resonant frequency of the water in the tank at that time and all that.
Well, think about when you're running your air conditioner in your car. Your air conditioner is producing heat, which in turn is the temperature difference between that and the air outside, and so you get moisture built up. You get condensation built up, which drips right out onto the ground. So using Stan Meyer's system, you could run your air conditioner and use that temperature difference to capture that water and pump that right back into your fuel tank. So the more you use your air conditioner, the fuller your gas tank gets. Your fuel tank.
Your water tank.
Yeah, your water tank. And then if you get thirsty, you just pull over the side of the road and put a siphon hose down your fuel tank and get you a drink, you know? Does that sound crazy?
Yeah, that's distilled water, though. That'll leach vitamins out of you, but still.
Well, either way, look. Hey, stop drinking the fuel, fool. We got to go somewhere. All I'm saying is, look, man, that's why I call it mad science on the Mad Science channels, because, you know, the blatantly obvious right in front of your face that everybody just keeps on rejecting, you know, it's just nuts. Did you see the video I put inside the chat room over there? Is this a NASA scientist? The guy sitting here trying to measure the resistance of his eyes.
Yeah, I watched that first before he even joined.
Oh, man.
That guy's a character.
Yeah, I loved his electric guitar. Did you ever see that one?
No, I didn't.
He had the 120 plug-in connected to two wires on which were the guitar strings. And he called it electric guitar.
didn't Rickenbacker do that back in the 20s?
I don't know, but his version was pretty funny.
But Rickenbacker was the one who came up with the electric guitar, wasn't he? And and it was a very basic model. It just had a tin can.
Yep.
He made a couple of windings and put some pickups in there, and nice electric guitar.
You know the version that I like. Did you ever see that movie Young Einstein with Yahoo Sirius in it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, his guitar.
Hey. Oh, yeah, that's what
you said. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. He used the nuclear reaction from the beer at him to play the guitar, and he was rocking out, and his hair's all frying out and everything. He drained the nuclear reactor dry playing a guitar solo. that was priceless.
Yeah, you heard me playing my rubber band guitar. All it needs is steel strings.
Yeah. If you're interested in making your own kind of guitar, there's one out there called a Kanjo. Go out there and Google it on YouTube or something like that. Look up a Kanjo. It's really easy to make. It's pretty much a stick and an old aluminum can or a tin can or whatever. And
a string. Minus the can.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna wind some fine wire and make the electric pickup, the magnetic pickup.
Well, there you go, man. All you gotta do is put a little coil down on there, and you can plug it into your amplifier and amplify that deal.
That's right.
But all you're doing is moving energy from point A to point B. You're not doing anything fancy, and all the high-tech terminology in the world ain't gonna change the fact that if you understand plumbing, then you understand electricity, because it all functions the same way. Knowing that nature will always balance itself out. And if you throw nature off balance, as nature's swinging back into play, you know, throw water up in the air, the water's going to come down with some force. You see what I mean?
The only thing us plumbers can't do is make the water run on the outside of the pipes.
Well, there you go.
You can do that with electricity.
Yeah. But see, you know, either way, you still got pressure going on.
Hmm.
So, you know, if you can get the water to run on the outside of the pipes, that would be a cool trick. And I bet you could if you use the right frequency range, because you ever seen those videos out there where they got the sonic waves going through there and the water's doing all kinds of cool stuff?
Yeah.
So you're only limited by your imagination. You be the first guy to invent the system where the water goes on the outside of the pipe and you never have to worry about leaks.
Well, you can get water to go on the outside of the pipe if the pipe's vertical.
Yeah, it'll ride down the side of the pipe that way.
That's right.
But, you know, not understanding that the gravity will suck the water droplets off of it sideways and, you know, just run it upside down.
As John Searle always said, nothing is impossible except the state of your mind makes it so.
And I agree. You know, that's like when I talked to that doggone electrical engineer guy, you know, and he's looking at me all cross-eyed because I'm talking about things that to him in his world would be blasphemy. You can't do this, you know, it's against this law of physics or that law of physics or whatever. And I said, like, have you tried it yet? No, because it won't work. That's why I ain't tried it. Well, if you ain't tried it, how can you deny it? You know?
That's right.
Who would ever have thought you could get so much energy out of a hard drive motor?
Like I thought, you know, before. I mean, I was even asked on this show about Robert Searle's effect. And I said, man, that's a bunch of bull. Why? Take my word back these days. Stewie here, he started popping one thing after another at me, and I started looking at it and said, why didn't all the other videos tell me about that? You know? Now I see.
Well,
they got this doggone flying saucer. They flew with ham radio all over the doggone place. They tried to follow it to see how fast it was going. They lost track of it. They tried to check it on radar. They said, never mind, it's already here.
If you look at things on a microscopic scale and you can understand how they function, then you can understand that anti-gravity, maybe the word anti-gravity may be a misnomer, you know, but the way that things function, you know, using sonic waves, they get things to levitate. And using certain types of materials, they trap things in between two magnetic fields and get them to levitate. There's different ways of taking... materials and coils of wire to get things levitate and such. So it's not beyond the realm. It is science fact that levitation is fully plausible. And so if you understand that everything around you has a specific field to it, you know, negatives and positives, and you go against two opposites, they'll attract, you know. Two positives will repel each other. So now you know that there's atmosphere around you, and if you got a different positive field, and it's got a positive field, well, there you go. You got levitation.
Yeah, I took four speakers and made four sides of a box with them, and I kind of angled them back just a little bit, and I made a plexiglass top over the top of the stupid thing, and I took that white styrofoam, and I started rubbing them together until I got a bunch of them little white balls, and I put a bunch in there. I pumped music through there and watched the patterns of that thing floating, all that stuff floating around in the air. And you had to have the top on pretty much, because if you didn't, it would still stick to the plexiglass, but if you didn't, that stuff would fly all over.
While you were doing that,
jumping around, you could see patterns in the air. It was pretty cool.
While you were doing that, and you had all them little beads of styrofoam floating around, I usually have this hassle every time I get some sort of a package in the mail that they pack it full of styrofoam, and the little beads kind of get separated inside there. Aren't those things obnoxious? How you become some sort of huge magnet, and it just, you can't get them off of you.
No, you can't. They collect static electricity like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, they want to cling to you, man. So knowing that, you could use that knowledge for a purpose, you know. The Van de Graaff generator, the Windsurf generator, the Lord Hawksby device, all these different ways of us, you know, rubbing two materials together and building up a static charge. And you know that static charge can be stored in a capacitor bank, so it's all usable energy. This is how you put it from one place to next. Yeah.
You could put some of those in your dead batteries.
Yep. And now you got a dielectric going on.
There you go.
So, you know, whenever I was running that, until you said that on there, I was waiting for somebody to say that, you know, because if you understand a capacitor and then you understand a battery, even atmosphere is a dielectric. It takes a little bit to break down that dielectric, so whatever is within that range can be stored. You put a static charge on there, that negative and positive plate will store energy, and that energy is looking for a path to ground. So you go over there and touch that thing and get laid out, it's because you didn't understand. It's looking for a path. You just became it. In my mind, it's like super
like
simple.
For the X13 motor.
Huh?
Was it a bit like you did with the X13 motor when you were playing around with Raymond?
Oh yeah, Raymond got lit up too. I was like, welcome to the world of electricity, Raymond. And he was the only thing Raymond was upset about me getting shocked was the fact that he didn't get it on video.
Yeah.
So with friends like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, touch those two wires, man. I need to get it on video. You first. Wow.
That's a guy that likes looking the electric bug racket.
Yeah, I told him he was talking about the one I got. I said, there ain't no way. I'm not bringing mine out because I don't want him to give it a shot. I'd be over there having to do CPR on him because
you got some amps.
Yeah, I put four extra 500 volt capacitors on mine. Mine turns the bug to dust. Yeah, so don't learn about electrical safety by accident.
Well, there's power and prayer too. Barry Prince had a friend, Bill Stevens, died in a car wreck, not last night, but the night before. He asked that we pray for his family.
Yep, send our love out to all of them, man, because, you know, losing a friend is a tough go. You know, I've been down that road a few times, and it's never a good thing, but you know, just know that there's folks out here to do love you, and you know, our hearts go out to you, man.
So I wonder how hot I'm going to get that geodesic dome. I might just go ahead. For the hubs, you can use the best and easiest way for the hubs of a geodesic dome is some plastic lids to them buckets.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that. I mean, and they're all the same length when you're doing a 1B geodesic dome. It only needs like 12 of them, so that's a rather small, small deal, but I ain't got many plants this year, and I think that's going to be pretty cool.
Well,
so I'll do that. I'm going to assemble it at the shop, do some video, and then, pull it apart.
While you're doing that, turn that dome into a rain catcher as well, and use the PVC that you're going to be using for the structure of it to funnel that water in to water your plants with as well.
I'm using that one-inch fiberglass rod.
Oh, well, you can still put some plumbing in there.
But if I put the plastic on the bottom first and then go wrap around that thing as I go up, it'll act like a shingle and it should all come out to the outside.
Yeah.
I could catch it there. That's going to take up a nice footprint, so it'll work.
Well, however you do it, just do it efficiently from the beginning to end. That's why we should be building our houses and such. Anyway, guys, we're down to the wire. Like, we're probably going to run over here a second before it's all over with, but, it's been a brilliant conversation, and, it's always an honor to have you guys on there. Just wish you could have got Muddy awake a little bit earlier.
I was like about a half hour to 45 minutes trying to get connected where I could hear y'all.
Yeah, it's modern technology. You got to love it.
Microchap took over and ruined it.
You got a pork and bean can over there?
Oh, I got cans.
All right, well, we could stretch a wire from my house to your house, and we got a phone.
By the time I get the wire stretched, somebody drives by and takes the wire.
Oh, that'd probably be our luck. Somebody cut our service.
Well, that's why I'm sending you some helium balloons, Muddy, so that you can stretch it over the road.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go.
That's a good plan. And we could actually capture some of that static energy right out of the air, that Schumann resonance.
Well, I'm still waiting for the video for when he hooks these hydrogen balloons up to his Tesla coil when he gets it.
Cool.
There we go.
Ooh.
All right, everybody, you've been listening to the Knights of the Roundtable. You guys got a YouTube channel or anything you want to put out there real quick before we bail up out of here? Don't everybody jump to the microphone at once. I don't want nobody to chip a tooth.
https://www.youtube.com/user/muddymuddymudman. Yeah, close enough.
Yeah. Google it.
Just Google Muddy Muddy Mudman.
Yeah, what about you, Stuart?
I'm right for the moment, thanks.
Alright, cool.
No, man, you got a battery bank bigger than most people thought you could have. And he's got the wind turbine up there, he's got solar panels, and he's got these big old tractor tires loaded up with all that compost. He was listening to me about the compost, and he got two tires, so he started doing the compost eating. He got these lids on the top of them, make them look like oversized honey jars.
Cool.
He got the top off there and stuck his hand in there. He said he couldn't keep his hand in there very long.
Well, there you go, man.
And I've nearly got that project finished, too. It's looking really good, so I can't wait. I'm just waiting for my local hardware store to have some more of the poly elbows in so I can finish the job. And I should have it working within a day or two.
Cool. Sweet. Turning trash into treasure. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. So with that said, everybody, you've been listening to Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, and take care.
Sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd do you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Fulfills the terrible, and the knights of the round table.